Good morning. It is Tuesday, June 30th, 2009. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood.
Okay, it's about time we call the shots. That was Ann Feeney. That was War on the Workers. She starts off every edition of the Brain Labor Report with War on the Workers. This is Wes Brain. I'm host of the show.
This is Jason Houck. I'm the engineer.
Coming to you on Tuesday, and it is the last day. It's the last day of June, Jason. I don't know what happened to June. It's out of here. This show is not about the calendar. This show is not about the weather, although it's going to be hot today. This show is about the struggles of ordinary working people, and we connect the dots by having all kinds of progressive issues. We like to connect those dots between, what does trade have to do with my job I lost, maybe, here in Southern Oregon? Or what does affordable housing have to do with working people? Quite frankly, by the way, there's an interesting dynamics in Ashland, Oregon, and it has to do with those who have and those who don't. There's a lot of folks here in town don't have much. They tend to commute. They come over from Phoenix Talent. They do the work of Ashland. They do. They clean bed and breakfast inns. They clean restaurants. They work in restaurants. But at the end of the day, they can't live in Ashland. They get on the bus if they've got enough money to pay for the damn thing, and they travel back to Phoenix. Okay, little local comment there. You could be listening to us anywhere on the planet. This is KSKQ, our community radio station, via the internet at www.kskq.org. Right here in Ashland, Oregon, 94.9 FM. This is our low-power FM radio station, our community radio station. Hey, folks, we're not like NPR. We can't be bought and paid for. We have no commercial programming, and that is key to understand. We cannot be bought. Jason, here's a pile of money. Will you take it?
No.
He won't take it. There you go. I'm telling you. Jason, do you have your price?
No.
Well, we could talk about that, and we might later on. Listen to this, folks. Always near the top of our half-hour show, the Brain Labor Report likes to bring you the Workers Independent News, 3 minutes of cutting-edge news. You won't hear this anywhere else. It is syndicated around the country, but here in Southern Oregon, think about KCMX Hate Radio for a minute. They won't even touch this stuff. So for Tuesday, the 30th of June, 2009, here is the Workers Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The IUECWA says busloads of its GM retirees will picket the GM bankruptcy hearing today in New York. The retirees are angry over GM attempts to terminate the retiree health benefits, according to the union. The IUECWA retirees are not being treated the same as UAW retirees in the GM bankruptcy case. The United Steelworkers has joined with IUECWA to fight for these GM retirees who stand to lose out in a GM asset sale. The two unions together say they have about 50,000 GM retirees and dependents who rely on health care and other benefits that are threatened by the GM asset sale. GM is refusing so far to negotiate a VEBA trust fund for these retirees as it did with UAW retirees. So the unions say that if the GM asset sale goes ahead as planned, the new company will have no resources left to pay any claims for USW and IUECWA retirees. Supermarket workers at three big chains in Colorado are waiting to see if an extension on their contract deadline will produce an agreement on a new contract. Jesse Russell reports.
The United Food and Commercial Workers Local, representing workers at grocery stores in Colorado, has agreed to extend current contracts until midnight on July 18th. The union is in negotiation with the state's three largest supermarket chains, Safeway, Albertsons, and King Soopers. On Friday, the UFCW Local 7 and Safeway announced they would be returning to contract negotiations on July 14th. That comes after workers rejected the supermarket's latest contract offer last week. The Safeway workers voted in favor of authorizing a strike if they don't see an improvement in wage and pensions. King Super workers rejected a contract offer 2 weeks ago. Contracts at the three chains were set to expire on May 9th. King Supers has an agreement with Safeway that if workers at one chain go on strike, the other chain can retaliate by locking out its workers. Complaints filed by the union to the National Labor Relations Board accusing the two chains of offering to hire temporary workers at wages higher than what current employees are paid have been dismissed. The UFCW represents 17,000 workers at the three chains. Here is today's economic report. According to a new survey from Watson Wyatt Worldwide, 44% of workers age 50 or older are making plans to delay their retirement. The number one reason being cited by three-quarters of those workers is the unexpected loss to their 401k accounts. Half of those surveyed now say they plan to retire at 66 or later. In the late 1990s, the average age for retirement was 62. In the 50s, the average age of retirement was 67.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And you're listening to the Brain Labor Report. We have an in-studio guest today. Going to introduce him to you in just 1 minute. Song we've played quite a bit on the Brain Labor Report. It's going to be played again right now. Going to be sung by Julius Margolin. Julius is our friend. George and Julius are from the East Coast. They're from New York City, and they sing labor songs. Julius took on a new career, I think it was age 87 or 88. That's right. He took up singing songs, and he's one of our heroes, elected to the New York City Central Labor Council by his peers for like 35 years now, and this song is a good one. It's called I Don't Want to Be a Soldier. Here we go.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want, to be a soldier. Steal some other people's wealth, invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness, stop the killing, stop the suffering and the pain.
I don't want
to be a soldier, murder children in foreign lands, bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand. Dirty game. George Bush's war is a dirty game.
Boy, the song that ends forever. I don't want to be a soldier. And, oh my gosh, we could talk about that all day and tomorrow's show too. But we're back here live in the studio. You're listening to the Brain Labor Report. And if you're joining us about 14 minutes after the hour of 7, that's Pacific time. And you could be hearing us anywhere on the planet at www.kskq.org. Okay. Rivers is here. Welcome to our show, Rivers Brown, a resident here in Ashland, Oregon, sitting in the studio staring at me this morning right across the table. Rivers, thanks for joining us this
morning. Good to be here, Wes.
Okay, well, thank you. It is a bright and early morning, and going to be a hot one today, but we're not going to talk about the weather. We are going to talk about, let's for introduction, Rivers, know a few things about you. This man had, wait till you hear him talk. He's got a good accent. Rivers Brown, right? Rivers with an S on the end. Okay. Brown. And Rivers Brown, tell us a little bit about yourself, please, for an introduction here.
Well, Wes, I moved to Ashland a little over 9 years ago from Third World USA, being Louisiana.
Oh, my gosh.
I lived within 50 miles of where I was born and raised for over half a century before I moved here.
Interesting.
It's the only place I ever moved. I went and moved right next to the university, bought some property. They didn't have the money to buy at the time, and we've been happy there ever since.
I see.
Until.
Now, you live here in Ashland, Oregon, and about 9 years ago, you moved here, bought some property adjacent to the university,
right.
And something has happened that has fired you up.
Well, yeah, every 10 years, the university has to do their 2020 master plan and get it approved by the city.
I remember. In fact, I was employed at Southern Oregon University when, about 10 years ago, we came out with the 10-10 plan. Mm-hmm. And the 10-year plan is, I guess, being done again. They call it the 10-20 plan.
2020.
What, 2020.
We're
what
in a new century
about.
Now, Wes.
Okay. Thank you. Drink some coffee. Wake up, Wes. 2020. This sounds like science fiction. Okay, the year 2020. Oh, my God. That's about 10 years from now. The university does a 10-year plan. You've been checking this out, and you've come across some alarming news for perhaps you, or for you, and maybe a bunch of other folks. Tell us.
Well, yes. I was just perusing tidings online one day and saw an article about Daily Tidings online and saw an article about SOU expansion. So I read the article and then went to the link to see what the expansion was. Let's say the link for the university, which is www.sou.edu/master-plan/.
And, okay, through the SOU
right.
website, those forward slashes, I'm starting to figure this internet, are going to be different places on the SOU site and the master plan. You found it.
Yeah, I found it. It's hard to find just going into the SOU site, but if you know the link, you can get there. But
So
I started perusing the pictures of their alternatives and got the one, and I said, holy smokes, I'm out of here. It's and they had a big old template laid down on top of our house and the community garden right behind
it. On top of your house? Is that what you said?
Right.
Oh,
on top of our property, because actually we live right up next to the university. They sort of surround us where we live on Ashland Street.
For perspective and for people who know Ashland, Oregon, and the university here, Southern Oregon University is what we're talking about. The Boulevard, there's some who live above and some who live below the Boulevard. I'm hearing that you live above the Boulevard. That's going to be on the plaza side of the university. You live probably in the general area of Lincoln, the old Lincoln School that was shut down?
Right above Lincoln School there. I live between Lincoln Playing Fields now and Glenwood Park.
And the university thinks your house would be a better classroom than a house? What's going on?
No, it's not classroom at all. They've got a plan for one of their concepts they're trying to do is a faculty village, which to maybe attract young faculty to the university and hold them here. Sounds like a doable concept, but it has a number of flaws to it, built-in flaws in the concept, but especially where they want to do it. They've got a plan to stack up maybe up to three-story condo housing in a single-family residence neighborhood. And it's such a architectural clash in scale and population density that a neighborhood group is formed to resist it, along with a community garden neighborhood group to resist them moving the Ecos Community Garden away.
When you say community garden, you know what you make me think about in the concept of this discussion we're having this morning about expanding SOU. What it is this. It's process. One of the things I know, and folks, a little disclosure here, I worked at Southern Oregon University for, 15 years. And prior to that, I was an SOU student. My kids have gone there. My family, got brothers and sisters gone there. Okay, I'm a Raider. You know what that means? I'm attached to the university. In fact, I yell for the Raiders at a football game, and they are my school. Having said that, the university gets an F minus. I mean, worse than just a standard F, an F minus when it comes to their relationship with the surrounding community, in this case, city of Ashland, where they live. Y'all see the world from where you're at. And if you're an employee or a student or faculty at the university, you're getting lots of information pumped out from the university. In fact, it may appear that you're really integrated quite well with the city of Ashland. Wrong. The city of Ashland, all you have to do is walk across the street or off of the campus and go door to door and talk to the people there. There is such a void between the university and what they do and the surrounding city, you can't believe it. In this case, and the reason I'm bringing this up, is process. You found by chance on a website something that alarms you. I mean, your house is going to go away is what you're telling me, but it's the process. How did we get there? Were you involved? Was I involved? I'll tell you who was involved. A bunch of insiders at Southern Oregon University who might have a scheme to make some money. Ooh, Wes, what did you say? Let me slow down and ask you about the concerns you see, but I think process is a very important part, and let's do keep that in mind. I'm talking too much and not hearing enough from my guest, Rivers Brown. Please, go ahead.
Well, Wes, I'd like to say the way I found out about this is because the process was broken. It shouldn't be that the most impacted neighbor with this project should find out through reading the paper and never having been contacted. Their process was broken from the start. They've already presented this in working study works with the Planning Commission, but they crowed about their public forums they had, where they invited the public, they sent notices out to everyone. 8 of my neighbors that border the university got none that they know of. But at the public forums that they crow about, 0 attended the first and 3 people attended the second. But they crowed about these forums that they had. And so the notice to neighbors, they didn't get. The most impacted people didn't get it. They said they sent out forms with everybody, but there's major issues, not only faculty housing or, let's say, condo-type housing being pushed upon an old residential neighborhood here, an inappropriate housing, but also there's a giant student transfer. All the students virtually, except for 96 in Madrone Dorm, will be transferred below the boulevard to North Campus. I mean, have to run that Siskiyou gauntlet.
Okay, well, that is a big concern. Folks, to put this in perspective, the university is looking at a private-public partnership to build housing that would be available for faculty, as Rivers tells us, to attract younger faculty at the university. They've chosen an area pretty much doing this without local residents knowing what's going on, and the university is real good at building things. They don't maintain them very well, and I want to comment on that in a minute here. Unfortunately, we're talking about our assets. I mean, taxpayers' assets are ignored once they're built by the state, in this case, Southern Oregon University. One big issue I know about firsthand, I'd like to comment on that. We don't have a lot of time here either this morning. But when we talk about this planned housing for faculty, condos, sounds like gentrification to me. It sounds like what we don't want in Ashland architecturally, just to speak on that for a minute. But here we got this thing that's going to going to probably kick you out of your house, and the state of Oregon could do that if they want to. Now, what I want to ask about is students being displaced across the university. There's a bunch of dorms up there. In fact, they keep building dorms. They can't even occupy them now. The university builds buildings very, very well. How are the students going to be displaced across the campus?
Well, students didn't even hear about this either. Just as a little bit of an aside, they wanted to plop a parking lot down on top of the community garden. ECOS got Ecology Center of the Siskiyous, a student organization, got 500 signatures that the university more or less ignored, and they didn't talk to the students about it until the day before Dead Week. But the whole thing, and students weren't engaged with this transfer of between 800 and 1,000 students to the other side of the boulevard from where they now live, which puts multiplies up to be 3,200 to 7,200 extra pedestrian crossings a day on the boulevard.
They're going to move students from where to where? I don't understand.
They're abandoning Cascade and Susan Holmes dorms and want to build large, multi-story, mixed-use dorms on Ashland Street, sort of next to where Green Springs is now and across from the shopping center there.
You say abandoned Cascades. There's a huge dormitory complex, not mainly.
It's pretty unbelievable.
What do you mean abandoned? What are they going to do?
Well, they're either going to tear it down and land bank it, or they may have it for future academic uses. There's different contingency plans, but all of this is projected on a growth that they do not have. They've been losing population growth over there at the university. The only reason they've gained any is because of the new Medford Center that they have.
Rivers, you told me some of the key people pushing us through are Craig Morris and Larry Blake. Is that correct?
Well, for sure, Larry Blake is the planner on this. Now,
The sustainability guy.
Sustainability hat, yes. But it's outsourced to a Portland planner.
They've got some out. So actually, that's how you get. I don't know if you knew this. That's how you get experts' opinion. Is you go as far away as you can, and you bring somebody in. No one knows, and they're an expert. Go ahead.
But the definition of sustainability basically ought to be that local folks have control over what happens in their own neighborhood and lives.
Let's get back to process, because that's where this has failed. I haven't seen any meetings posted. I haven't heard about it. I am concerned myself. I am adjacent to the university myself. I'm down on Garfield Street, and it alarmed me when I saw the 2010 plan that the university was going to expand about two houses away from me. That would be the border. I didn't know about that either. So it's about process, and the university is like a bowl in a china shop. Let me tell you this. They can build things. They can't maintain them. They don't take care of pipes. They don't care. How about asbestos? Oh, my God. The university has a history, and I know this firsthand, folks. This isn't like opinion. This is a fact. Horrible asbestos issues with the university ignored because, well, it's easier to ignore than deal with things. And
let me tell you something about this. This is pertinent to us. The city of Ashland, if they approve this right now on Bastille Day, the 14th of July, when this comes up before the Planning Commission,
yes,
will abdicate all of their normal planning processes, give them up. And these projects are also out of the tax base of Ashland.
You understand that. All the state facilities here do not pay taxes. That certainly is something to
consider. But we won't even have any control over it whatsoever if it does go past the Planning Commission and passed by the council now.
Rivers Brown, there is this meeting coming up on the 14th. Let's talk about that. The time of that, we've got just 2 minutes to go. Mm-hmm. Sounds to me like that's where the work needs to be done. Probably need to get some people there and say, slow down. You haven't even included me. What time's the meeting and where?
Well, it's on Bastille Day, actually. Okay. The 14th of July at 7 p.m. at the Council Chambers East Main. And we're expecting a good turnout because there's a lot of people in the neighborhood that are just starting to become aware of it. Virtually no one in Ashland knows about it. Everyone I ask, nope, they never heard of this plan. And it's right in the middle of Ashland and impacts Ashland, we would say negatively, tremendously impacts Ashland.
It's time to take a look at if they're talking about moving students across the boulevard and having more of them cross that boulevard every day.
With no good way to do it.
With no good way to do it. Gladys was killed, by the way, in a crosswalk at the top of my street, Garfield Street. And that called some attention to the safety problems, but it doesn't seem like the university has learned much. We just got a minute left to go here. And I want to thank you for coming in this morning, Rivers. And join us in the KSKQ studio, bringing up some problems as you see it. By gosh, you got me 100% on the process. I think there's huge problems, and I got my comments on them, too. I live in this neighborhood. Here's the deal. I think you can fight City Hall, and by gosh, you're working on a meeting. Again, one more time, we have to say goodbye. The meeting is
Bastille Day, the 14th of July, 7 p.m. at the Council Chambers.
Here in Ashland, Oregon, and we're talking about struggles of ordinary working people. We're talking about housing for faculty, but we're talking about a plan. Well, it's about gentrification in Ashland, and a bunch of outsiders who run that university are not running it very well. We'll end with that. Rivers, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks,
we have to
Wes.
Say goodbye.
Appreciate it.
Come back and let us know how the fight goes. Folks, we're out of here. Back again tomorrow. Take care, everybody.